There will be no personal nor direct attacks on anyone. And I would ask that you please try to keep down the loud cheering and the clapping. There will be no booing and no unruly behavior. With that,
this is painful, and it will be for a long time.
Donald Trump, baby! That's right, this man knows what's up!
After all, these are a couple of high-stepping turkeys, and you know what to say about a high-stepper. No step too high for a high-stepper.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Well, Sean's a tough guy. I mean, I think everybody knows that. You know, Sean, he took some licks. He hangs in there.
Yeah, what's wrong with the beer we got? I mean, the beer we got drank pretty good, don't it?
Did you hear what I said?
So this is a brave council. I had no doubt about them.
That doesn't suck.
If you don't like it, you're banned.
Last question. Were you high on drugs?
Last question. Kiss my...
All right, here we go. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile on this Friday. Live local talk over the next couple of hours. Glad you're here. Lots to do on the show today. And you want to be part of it. Phone number, text line, 34... And text line. They're both. Same number for both. 343-0106. 343-0106. Start off the show, too, and some notables for today. And notable for tomorrow. We'll get into that, like anniversaries of things. One year, one 15 years. You can probably guess the 15-year one pretty easily. Can you guess the 1 year since? Well, I'll tell you more about that in just a second. But news breaking as I got started here. This came in just about 7-8 minutes ago. It came in from the Attorney General's office, and here it is. Mike Hubbard will be going to jail. This is here's what was sent to us. Attorney General Steve Marshall issued the following statement in response to the Alabama Supreme Court's denial of former Speaker Mike Hubbard's application for rehearing of the court's decision affirming his conviction on 6 counts of violating Alabama ethics law. Here's the quote from the Attorney General said, the long road to justice is finally nearing its end for former Speaker Mike Hubbard. Today, the Alabama Supreme Court effectively reaffirmed its April 10th ruling upholding 6 counts of Mr. Hubbard's conviction of violating Alabama's ethics law. The court denied Mr. Hubbard's application for rehearing and issued a certificate of judgment requiring the former speaker to report to begin serving his prison sentence. According to Alabama criminal statutes, Mr. Hubbard's state appeals now have been exhausted, and all that remains is for him to report to the Lee County Sheriff's Office to be processed and turned over to the Alabama Department of Corrections. Mr. Hubbard can no longer avoid being held accountable for his flagrant violations of Alabama's ethics law. Goes on to say here, as we've previously stated, this case was not just a trial of a former Speaker Hubbard's misconduct, but also a test of our ethics law. Hubbard campaigned in 2010 on the message that Alabama sorely needed a stronger ethics law. Our ethics laws must be strengthened and protected in order to prevent a repeat of such cavalier violations in the future. End quote. So, there you go. So it looks like, how long has that been? And I know Jeff's out in the hallway somewhere. He could, I don't even need Google if Jeff Bohr's out there. The conviction, the original conviction on Hubbard, it's like a long time ago. He has stayed out of prison for quite some time. And now it looks like today is the day he will go into the system. So there you go. That's as we get started. All right, so the notable, we could talk about that as well, and the Alabama ethics law. And you hear my pause because, I mean, of course, there was always the irony of former Speaker Hubbard's push on these ethics laws and then getting caught in the web that he spun kind of thing, or the discussion of the ethics laws that have been changed and reaffirm and edited. Is it something that somebody should, is it obvious the violations of the ethics law in Alabama? Should you know better? You can talk about the Hubbard convictions and those things that he was convicted on. Those 6, probably I'd say 3 or 4 of those 6 are pretty darn obvious. But are there other things? You know, is it something that someone should know better? On the ethics laws in Alabama. We talk about that. But yeah, the anniversary. First of all, tomorrow, and I know this because a child in my house that was born in the middle of Hurricane Katrina. We've talked about Hurricane Laura and the damage done in southwest Louisiana. 15 years ago tomorrow, Hurricane Katrina. And you talk about looking at the satellite imagery of Laura, you know, before it went in, that evening before it went in, it was something out of a textbook when you look at a hurricane. Go back and Google pictures of Katrina from 15 years ago before landfall when it was a 5. Now, Katrina had landfall as a 3. There's argument that maybe the second eye wall maybe it was closer to a 4, but a 3. But a day or two before landfall, Katrina was out in the middle of the Gulf and was a 5. And there are pictures that show Hurricane Katrina and the outer bands and the outer bands almost occupying the entire Gulf of Mexico. Do y'all remember that? 15 years. To me, it does not seem 15 years ago, but it was. And then, so there's one thing we'll talk about today, 15 years since Katrina. You know, lessons learned. Have we changed the way we do things along the coast? Are we better off if we face something like that or even something like a Frederick in the future? Something to talk about during hurricane season. And the other one is 1 year since what? Did anybody guess it? I'm going to see the text line is flashing. Katrina and Andrew were the most impressive looking storms in history, says Dan. Yeah, you remember Hurricane Andrew slamming in as a 5 down there in South Florida. That kind of textbook picture of a hurricane. But anybody guessing what we're 1 year since? Anyone? 1 year since. So it was a big deal. It was the biggest, I would say the biggest news story of last year. Without a doubt, to the point I was interviewed on a couple shows, and I know I was on in one interview also with John Sharp from AL.com. Lord knows he and I talked about it. We talked about it with Jeff Poore so many times, talked about it with y'all. What would that be? 1 year ago today is when we heard from Governor Ivey's office saying, here's the quote, with the action taken today, there's no pathway forward, and this project is dead, end quote. That was Governor Ivey's press release that happened the second. Remember, the MPO voted 8-1 to remove the project from its transportation improvement plan, the TIP. And the letter from the governor came in like seconds after saying the whole project was dead. Remember, she said, not going to do anything with it. We're not going to come back and take another bite at it. We're not going to try to do some edits here. Nope. Done. Finished. No. No more. So it was 1 year ago today that the toll, you can look at it this way, the victory that those of us that oppose a toll out there had, the victory was that the toll was defeated. But I would say a little bit of a pyrrhic victory, because at least as of now, no movement on the infrastructure that's needed. Now, what will happen going forward? I know there are a lot of people who have come on the show over this last year that said, oh, well, we're working for that. We need it. I know that Republican nominee for AL1, Jerry Carl, has talked with us many times, talked about, you know, he's going to go to Washington, be talking about this, trying to get something done. But as of now, there's no deal. There's nothing happening with this. There's no movement on this. So it's 1 year ago today that the tolls were defeated. And the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project went to the back burner, if not back in the refrigerator. 12:15, FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile. We'll talk more about that when we get back. Take some calls. Also, Jason Johnson from Lanyap joins us today. And Dalton has a series of stories that I have missed this week he wants to bring to you. So stay tuned. We'll be back in like 3 minutes here. You need to check the news.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
At 12:20, FM Talk 106.5, Midday Mobile. Segment of the show brought to you by 1-800-GOT-JUNK, online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. That's my buddy Trey, doing great work. 12 years in Mobile and Baldwin County. It's one of those businesses that would have been affected by the toll if it would have been. Remember $6? Remember that? More if you had your boat hooked up, had a trailer, had a commercial. That was defeated 1 year ago today. And that's when the governor kind of threw the, threw down the flag and said, no more. Well, still, it's been, it's been a year. And we'll talk about what's happened and not happened. I can tell you this. It's a Friday. And I know this. I've talked to my buddy Trey about this before. Like, not a lot of people probably will have 1-800-GOT-JUNK come out, like, on a Friday. But this is a good day to plan things for next week. I mean, you might want to have them call and see if you can get an appointment today. But this is a day that, like, in my world, if I'm going to do something on a Monday or Tuesday, you make that call today to 1-800-GOT-JUNK, or you can go to their website, 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. If you got to get rid of junk at the house, the office, storage unit, house you're getting ready to sell, whatever it is, you got junk, you need to get rid of it, you need 1-800-GOT-JUNK. So make that appointment. And set, you know, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, something like that that works for you. They will work with you on an appointment time. They'll show up, quote your price. If you say yes, they get to work and get the junk gone. It is 1-800-GOT-JUNK online at 1-800-GOT-JUNK.com. Yes, David. He said, David, so what you're saying is a year ago today, the governor called 1-800-GOT-JUNK and had them come pick up the junk that is now the toll bridge proposal. Yes, something like that. All right, to the phones at 343-0106. First up, Damon in Mobile. Hey, Damon.
Hey, Sean, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to call in as a perfect time to call because of the one-year anniversary, because about 6 months in after it was killed, I was always thought to myself, what happened to the people that had to sell their land through eminent domain? I know there was a seafood company that,
yes,
that existed for four or five generations, another, I think, a gas station down there, several others. What happens? Do they have a chance to get their land back, or is it just done? Or,
well, okay, so the one that I have read, and I know there was more than one, but the one you're talking about, the seafood brokerage down there, because I asked about that. I said, do they get it back? I think if I remember, this, Damon, this is off the top of my head, so if I mess up, within seconds, somebody will correct me on social media or the text line. But I think he chose not, like, for some reason, I thought there was a choice there, but maybe not. But he was done with it. I know that. He was done with it. I haven't heard any other conversations about that. And what Damon's talking about, if y'all don't remember, in the footers and the path of the I-10 Mobile River Bridge, were private property that they were forced to sell through eminent domain. I'll have to check in to find out if that changed, but it seems to be, Damon, if the project is dead, if it's really dead, then they should have the right to buy back, wouldn't you think?
I would hope, unless I've heard that in some cases, these projects, like the highway thing with what's his name, the guy that just won the election here, Carl, Jerry Carl,
uh-huh,
you know, the project went on for years before the actual road went in. Well, I mean, it could, your property could be tied up for years in that thing. I don't.
Yeah, I mean, you bring up a good point. What do you do here? I mean, if the people came in and bought it back, is that us saying that we're never going to do it? Because even the people, listen, I was, you know, chin high in the fight against the tolls, but I'm also somebody that believes we need the infrastructure going forward. We need to find another way to do it, but I want improvement. I want expansion. I want to have better travel across the bay. There's some people say, I don't want anything. No, I disagree. I think the bridge is a good idea, but there's pared back ideas that have been presented. Remember that? Like the let's not do the Taj Mahal plan, and it seems like the governor's office and ALDOT said, nope, it's either this way or nothing.
Yeah. Hey, I want to share a quick funny story, and I learned about a couple of years ago. if I could share that with you real quick.
Sure.
Born in San Antonio, born in Mobile, raised in San Antonio, and the quick story is a poultry equipment salesman retired and opened a little chicken place in front of the Alamo just to, you know, keep busy, and he sold chicken and a bun and I think a drink to tourists that came to the Alamo. And then they won the World's Fair, and so through eminent domain, they told him, hey, we're going to have to, you know, take this land that your little chicken shack is on. And he cried foul, and
foul.
You're gonna kill. Yeah, well, yeah, foul. There we go. My unintended pun. But but they said, we'll make good. We'll give you another property, and we'll do this, and we'll set you up. So they set him up in another business across town, east of the downtown, and he opened another chicken place, and another one, and another one. His name was George W. Church, and that became Church's Fried Chicken.
You're kidding me. So
nope,
he got eminent domained into success.
A global chicken, a chain.
Well, Maybe my, you know, I'm such a fighter against eminent domain being abused, but maybe in that case, hey, if they want to come take my place, if they'll give me that same kind of... David, have a great weekend, man. Thanks for the call.
All right, bye.
All right, so can somebody have... I want to... I don't know. I mean, I've looked, and I'm Googling here as best I can, but... And I know that Jeff had just had State Senator Chris Elliott on, and if he or anybody else in that mix is listening, have you heard? Is there a way to, and whether they would want to or not, is there a way to undo, like Damon's asking, the eminent domain that was used to take that property? Because right now they got it sitting there, and really a year later, I haven't heard anything that makes me think the project's going to pick up anytime soon. But I'm talking to Jerry Carl and others, they all are pro bridge. It was just anti toll. You know, it was very ham fisted of Aldott and the governor to say, you know, no. Well, if you don't vote for the tolls, then this whole project is off. Is there not another way? Is there another way now that interest rates are so low, right? For the state maybe to bond the money here to do this. What about that? A lot has changed here. Is it time? I would say this, if President Trump wins in November, one of the things he talked about on the campaign trail, you know, like last night. So last night at the RNC, the president's 70-minute speech with the fireworks spectacular afterwards. with the Trump 2020. Hey, something different, isn't it? It's a... could be a change. The days of saying, well, it's just not done because of decorum and past precedent, those days are out. So, in that conversation, Ivanka first, and then President Trump going through, you know, promises made, promises kept. I know there's a lot of themes out there we've been talking about on the station all day, from Dalton and Dan talking about it this morning to Jeff talking about it. I'm talking about it now. One of the things I'd take away from everything you've heard is, hey, here's promises that President Trump made, and here's how, a scorecard, right? Here's how he kept them. A lot of fronts, done quite well. The infrastructure, remember that? Remember that plank of the platform in 2016? Where he, like I said, it's a populist. I've said this many times, and people still don't, you don't get it. No, you don't get it. President Trump is a populist, not a hardline conservative. Which is makes him very electable, beyond maybe somebody who tells you what you don't want to hear. So the president talked about infrastructure on the campaign trail. And remember how much he was talking about spending? Wasn't it a $1 trillion infrastructure plan? And we all sat back and said, well, he's not going to get that through Congress. But heck, if he gets $500 billion, what does that mean for the country? And what does that mean for projects like we have here at home? Well, I have a feeling if President Trump gets reelected, and he'll have 2 years before he kind of goes into lame duck mode there, 2 years, and we'll see what happens in the House if the Republicans keep control of the Senate and they at least get close enough to make it sweaty for Speaker Pelosi in the House. You might see an infrastructure bill come through. I don't know about the $1 trillion. That's what he said on the campaign trail in 2016. That seems like, hadn't we had enough trillions lately in debt? But a big program. I mean, you could see President Trump getting behind something like that, going around championing, you know, getting Americans to work on our roads and infrastructure, which needs to be done. It's not just here at home in the state of Alabama, not just bridges either. It's our roadways and a lot that needs to be done. But doing a nationwide push for that, especially, I would point out, if we come through November and the economy starts to soften, okay? Yes, the stock market's good, but, you know, you got no interest rates or incredibly low, right? We would argue artificially low. What if we get through November, that goes away, and we start to trend into a recession? Well, one of the things, you know, work projects, as in, you know, work projects from the 1930s, but maybe this could be done for road infrastructure coming out to try to pump money into the economy and have something to show for it. I have a feeling something like that would get traction. And if that is going to happen, would we be the beneficiary down here of having an increased level of federal funding? Remember, that's what pushed this whole thing. was the idea that, if y'all remember, if you go in the time machine with me and you go back to when we've been talking about the I-10 Mobile River Bridge project for a decade and a half before last year. And it had always been this idea it was going to be an 80-20 split. 80% federal money, 20% an amalgamation of local, regional, state money. Even out of state to some degree. I mean, in neighboring states. Then all of a sudden, it flipped around, and the federal portion of it was small. What was it, 18%? Something like that? It almost flipped around 180 on us. And that's what caused the issues of how to pay for this thing. So what if we're looking at President Trump in second term? Republicans retained the Senate. I know there's a bunch of people saying the Republicans are going to take the House. I hadn't seen it yet. But if they get a few more seats to make it a little bit closer in the House, does the president get something done on that? And maybe that's how we get this done. Worth discussion. We'll talk about it when we come back. Also, Dalt Norwig has, I don't know how many of the 6.5 stories, but we got stories on the way.
This is Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
Welcome back. FM Talk 106.5 and Midday Mobile, Friday style. Glad to have you here. Got a little conversation I have with Dalton here in just a second. He's bringing us some of the stories I missed this week and stories maybe that I was embarrassed to bring you. That's why Dalton comes in here. With that, also, we'll take some more calls. Yeah, 1 year since defeat of the I-10 Mobile River Bridge toll. What has changed? What might be next? We'll continue that conversation as well. Joined now by my buddy Larry Kirby at LCM, and time to talk inventory. And you have a bunch of inventory under 10,000.
Absolutely, we do have a great selection. We just got a bunch of them in. We're still getting them checked out, serviced, and put on the lot for sale. But we got mid-size, sport utilities. We got full size. We got full size truck, small trucks. We got all different kind of cars. Fit under that, plus, you know, we put a warranty on all these vehicles, 3,000-mile powertrain, so you got some, that helps a lot on the purchase price.
Sure does. And you have said this before, if we do want to take that vehicle to our mechanic, just take it, get that opinion.
Absolutely, no qualms whatsoever. Just take it and get it checked out for a second opinion. We don't mind that one bit.
Okay, let's talk about vehicles 10,000 and under. Are there any financing options on that?
Absolutely. We got the same financing options as we do on a $50,000 vehicle. So we can get those done just about any place with the required stipulations.
You're singing my song, Larry. Tell folks how to come out and check out the inventory and talk financing.
Come see us at Highway 90 and Plantation Road, online at lcmotorcars.com. Like us on Facebook or just call us at 375-0068.
Thanks, Larry.
Thanks.
Larry Kirby checking in from LCM. Might see you out there this weekend. Go see him. All right. A couple texts here, too. All right. So I can't read that one out loud.
Sorry. I had to text something.
All right. So Scotty says, you left out what I left out that Riley or Ivy, I can't remember which, failed to get the federal proposal in on time, causing the amounts paid on the bridge to change drastically. No. Scotty, it was
the Love Gov.
That's right. You said
come on
Riley
down.
And Bentley, baby.
Oh, yeah.
Scotty, he was busy. He had other things on his mind.
Like what?
Spring. a young man's thoughts in spring. You know? So, no, it was, yeah, remember that? I remember they forgot to get it in on time, and it was saved, though, Scotty. Congressman Byrne somehow did some move.
An edit.
Yeah, something, and got it fixed in Washington.
Yeah.
But the amounts had turned around in the ratio of federal dollars before that. And it's been, hey, this is coming. And this has been coming, that the feds are pulling back from these road projects. It's not just here. It is elsewhere. But for 15 years, or at least a decade of this discussion, it had always been an 80-20. I mean, y'all have been talking about the story a lot since this station was launched, mm-hmm. you know, in 2009. And it was 80-20, 80-20, 80-20, 80-20, meaning 80 federal funding, 20 conglomeration of local state. And then all of a sudden we got, I don't know, a year and a half before, maybe like, say, 2 years before now, or maybe 3 years ago, somewhere in there. It was all of a sudden they said, oh, you know, that 80-20 thing, not so much.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Maybe you can help me with this. Who was it that broke the news that not only would they be tolling the new bridge, but also the Bayway once that new bridge was built?
This happened on this show.
Yeah.
Two folks in here from ALDOT. That was in January of 2019.
That's when everything turned.
Yeah. Yep.
That news came out.
That was it. They were sitting in here, and I remember saying, well, yeah, so you because we'd all were focused, remember, that they were going to toll the bridge. And I honestly, it wasn't great, but I didn't think that was a deal killer. It wasn't a deal killer for me, because you could use your freedom of choice to stay on the route that you'd already used, or you could choose to pay the money on the bridge. I've talked about this before. I'd choose, like, in Florida, we're driving down to South Florida to see my sister and my niece and nephew and brother-in-law and all going down there. I choose to pay the exorbitant money to get on the Florida Turnpike.
Right.
But I make that choice because it gets me there a little bit faster. It's easier. I could go over to 95 or go down 75, but I make a choice. And so I don't have a problem with that when you have a choice.
Right.
So we had all moved along, if you remember, with this idea that it was going to be this choice. And then the folks from ALDOT were sitting in here and they said, no, in fact, you have to toll both the proposed bridge and the existing tunnel because it would be leaky.
Yeah.
And I said, what, the tunnel's leaky? They said, no. Leaky in the fact that people would shun pike, as Dalton taught me that term.
Yeah.
And that shun pike is the term for somebody choosing the free option over the paid option out there. So they said, well, yeah, we have to put in the toll on the tunnel or nobody will use the bridge. And at that point, it was in January, and they told me, I said, well, I had not heard that. They said, well, we published it in a document 3 months ago or something like that. And I said, well, I hadn't read that far through the document, and nobody else in the regular world where I live has. Mm-hmm. And that did. That started that snowball build, and here we are a year after the defeat of the tolls, but I will say this, it is somewhat of a pyrrhic victory. I was as nose deep in it as I could be in the fight against the tolls, but I also believe we do need the infrastructure. So I'm a person, there are some people out there say, good, we defeat the tolls and we don't need anything, we shouldn't do anything. I disagree. Defeat the tolls, I was with you 100%, but we got to find another way to build that infrastructure. So just a side note, and it's, yeah, so it was August 28th, 2019, when the MPO, their Eastern Shore, voted not to put it on their tip. And then, like, within 12 seconds, this scathing email comes in or yeah, memorandum from the governor's office saying the whole thing's dead.
So, and it's been a long year since then.
Yes. Can you imagine that? Imagine back when we only had to worry about tolls. And remember the old days when it was just tolls?
Things have changed since then.
All right. So, but what hasn't changed is way back then, Dalton was bringing us stories of 6.5 stories. And today in 2020, even during a pandemic, Dalton still digs up these stories that I miss. What do? You just troll the internet? You look for...
Yeah, I've got my certain haunts that I hang out in and on the internet.
Honky talks.
And,
internet honky talks.
I find some fun, interesting stories. They are all toll-free, except for the toll they might take on your mind from having to listen to some of these ridiculous stories. But yeah, I mean, we're doing now 8 hours of live local talk from 6 a.m. to 2 p.m., and then more live local talk in the afternoon. And these are stories that I don't believe have been mentioned at all.
It's a shame.
On the 60 hours or so of live local programming over the course of the week, these stories have not been mentioned, I don't think. So I'm going to bring them to you right now.
If y'all are new to this feature is called 6.5 Stories with Dalton Orwig. Band seems to be out of quarantine. They're doing good and they're ready to go. So these are the stories. So what do we got?
Well, we'll take it back to an old favorite here to get it kicked off, and that would be Florida Man.
Florida Man.
We're going to start with a Florida Man story. Actually, Florida Men here. And this story comes from Hollywood, Florida.
Down South Florida, yeah.
A group of men already on pretrial release. They had been released on bond for obviously previous offenses. They're now behind a string of burglaries that were carried out while all three were wearing GPS ankle monitors to track their location. You're going to break into a house, maybe don't have a GPS ankle monitor.
All of them had the...
Every single one of them. Authorities seized more than $150,000 in cash, an AK-47, a Smith & Wesson, cell phones, iPads, jewelry, designer handbags, ammunition, blank checks, fraudulent debit and credit cards, and a stolen vehicle. And, yeah, they were wearing ankle monitors when they got picked up. 21-year-old Zion Hall, 19-year-old Tyreek Williams.
If I'm the judge, just for a second, if I'm the judge, and I'm trying to have an open mind and look at these people and say, you know, maybe it's the first time to hear. Maybe the facts are, maybe they're really not guilty of this. We're going to see what. And all six of them that broke into this house have ankle monitors.
Yeah, three.
Three of them that broke in the house got ankle monitors.
They had six legs.
That's right. That's
I don't know if they had a monitor on each leg, but.
I would, at that point, I'd be like, yeah, but decisions, just bypass the courtroom.
Yeah, let's go to the tape, and then you watch them on Google Maps or whatever as they go to the house they got broken into. But they're all accused of being part of a, they say here, criminal organization. Some call it a gang.
Disorganization.
They've committed burglaries, armed burglaries, fraud, gun thefts, other criminal acts throughout South Florida. So now they all face charges of burglary, grand theft, and racketeering. Added to that, but the reason they got caught, those pesky little ankle monitors that they give you when you have a previous crime and still supposed to go to trial after that.
So they get, I wonder if they can track those. Like, well, you know, we'll have them on, you track on bird dog or like coon dogs, or you know, they'll have the tracker so you can see where they're going on your handheld to find the dogs. What if they just law enforcement could walk around and say, that there's old Smith.
There
he's pinging up here. Go. He's at the next block over.
There he goes. All right, story number two, and we've got an audio element here because I'm going to play you this whole news story. It comes from Bowen Island, Canada. It's in BC, Canada, just northwest of Vancouver. A man survived a lightning strike, which is a pretty epic tale in itself, but it's what he was wearing or not wearing when he got struck by lightning. Listen to this story.
Whoa! On the evening of August 16th and the morning of the 17th, more than 1,600 lightning strikes hit southern BC, and one hit Cal Meisner.
Yeah, there's no mistaking it. It was just this massive concussive shock.
Wearing only his underwear and Crocs shoes, the Bowen Island resident had gone outside just after midnight to close the windows on his truck. He had one foot on the running board, another on the ground, and his right hand on the ignition. When he got a shock, he'll never forget.
Bam! It was just this unbelievably loud bang. I think the whole truck was energized. Came up my right leg, went out my left, basically blew my Croc shoe across the road, and then, yes, just laid me right out on the ground.
He believes he was conscious for most of it. He recalls crawling to the house for help. His wife remembers finding him by the truck and helping him inside.
What I do know is my legs weren't working properly, and I actually felt at the time like they were both broken.
After half an hour, the feeling in Meisner's legs came back. Paramedics attended, but he did not go to hospital. A week and a half later, aside from a bruise, he says he feels great and lucky.
So are you going to buy a lottery ticket then?
Well, it's funny. That's one of the first things I did the following day was went online, bought my lotto tickets.
And as for his Crocs,
they will definitely be my lucky shoes. You know, they're not very flattering in terms of fashion statement, but I have a newfound appreciation for Crocs for sure.
Jordan Armstrong, Global News.
So the Crocs.
Right. So blue old boy cleaned out his Crocs.
Yeah, and he was only wearing the underwear and the Crocs as he went out to roll the windows up at his truck, which I think quite a few of us have been there before. Maybe not.
Okay, let's talk.
Not wearing the Crocs.
Side discussion on the text line: how far away from the house have you gone in your underwear?
What's the acceptable range? Or?
No, I'm saying I'm asking you.
Me,
I have gone to the mailbox before.
Mm-hmm.
In my underwear.
Okay, that's not bad.
There's my tell on myself.
When I lived in Grove Hill, I could probably make it a good 3 or 4 miles down the road in my underwear without being seen.
But living in a neighborhood, yeah, like when I'm on the farm, I may or may not have, yes.
Yeah, in the neighborhood, I've definitely pulled the Tony Soprano with the the boxers and the robe.
Right.
Go out to the side of the road, pick up the paper.
If you had the robe is... The robe's... That's not real. That's like training wheels. Yeah. How far have you gone just in your boxers? How far?
In the neighborhood, not far.
I did. I went to the mailbox one time.
Yeah, I had
it's like 3 in the morning, and I said, I probably can make this.
You've given me a new goal, though. I think I might just start making laps around the neighborhood this afternoon. only in the boxers, and I got to find a pair of Crocs. But if I'm anything like this guy, I'll get struck by lightning and survive. But he's holding on to the lucky Crocs, so you have that.
Blown clean out the Crocs.
Clean out.
All right, let's do one more here, and then we'll run to the news break.
Okay, so there's a new fun thing in music. You know, the kids these days, they're always coming up with new genres of music.
Sure.
I know a lot of people out there who are fans of what they'll call real music, some classic rock, classic country, anything with classic in front of it, hip-hop. That was back when they made real music, Sean, those classic days. Well, some people are taking classic music to a brand new heights here. It's something called bardcore that's gaining some steam.
Hardcore, you mean?
Bardcore. With
like B-A-R-D.
Right. It's YouTubers making covers of popular modern songs in medieval style. So think like Game of Thrones style. I'll play you one here. So we'll go Night at the Roxbury here. Here's a bardcore version of What Is Love. Everybody, let's start on the right. We'll all nod our heads to the right at the same time. And here's What Is Love.
What is love?
A small sample of bardcore there, and this is my favorite that I've heard so far, of course. Jolene, the Dolly Parton song that is so, so popular.
Sure.
Well, the bardcorists didn't let that one get past them. They've done Jolene, the Dolly Parton song.
I like it.
They've changed the lyrics up too to make it medieval.
They went old style with it, King James version. So that's some bardcore for you.
It makes me want to have a big pint of mead and like some mutton or something like that.
So yeah, I guess you know a lot of these Renaissance reenactors. They've been out of work during this coronavirus shutdown.
What is the effect of coronavirus shutdown on Renaissance Fair people? there's the news story that needs to be running tonight.
This is the effect. They stay at home and they make a new genre of music. They cover popular songs in the style of medievalists, and they call it bardcore.
So. All right, we'll let bardcore take us to the news break and come back with more of these stories right here on FM Talk 106.5.
Listening to Midday Mobile with Sean Sullivan on FM Talk 106.5.
So hashtag bardcore.
Hashtag bardcore.
I'm into that bardcore.
You know, they did Foster the People's Pumped Up Kicks. You'll like to hear that one.
Oh, I'll be hitting that up here directly. All right, we return to 6.5 stories with Dalton Norwig.
Story number four here. If you haven't noticed, we're living in a pandemic right now, and police in Springfield, Massachusetts, asked for the public's help to identify a man who has reportedly been hugging strangers in Walmart and then telling them he is just giving them COVID-19. It's something you don't want to have happen when you go out to Walmart.
Talk about getting kicked in the crotch.
Yeah, first off, I don't like hugs anyway, even when there's a virus going around. But when he's telling you that he's actively giving you COVID-19, that could cause an issue. According to police, the unidentified man walked up to a man in the Boston Road Walmart up there in Springfield, took an item from the man's hands, and then gave him a hug. He said, "Just giving you a COVID hug, you now have COVID." Laughed and then walked away. Now, unfortunately, the person he hugged there, a cancer survivor who was trying his best to distance himself from things like that. Yeah, it's really not a cool move at all. And the police there saying, of course, they don't consider it a laughing matter either. But on top of that, he's being sought for, they say here, assault and battery and making terroristic threats. So that's, I guess, what they're trying to charge him with these COVID-19 hugs. That might be a little heavy-handed there. I'm not sure if it rose to that. But according to Massachusetts state law, anyone who communicates a threat, either directly or indirectly, can be charged with making terroristic threats.
Sounds like it fits the definition.
This is just your PSA. Don't go out and give COVID hugs, even if you don't have the COVID, because you'll
need right in the...
Yeah, you'll start making some people upset. All right, so South Alabama, you know, Sean, that we love our Krispy Kreme here.
Got that right.
Some parts of this North America here, they love their Tim Hortons, and then you got other Dunkin' Donuts lovers in the Northeast, but we love Krispy Kreme, and I think it's mostly because of those awesome hot glazed donuts right when they come out of the oven. So a worker at Krispy Kreme thought, you know, they're good when you glaze them once. What happens when you glaze a donut 25 times? One single donut. And he kept running the same donut through the glazer over and over and over again. Posted it to TikTok. So they gave the Chinese all of our Krispy Kreme secrets here. And the whole video of them glazing it over and over and over. He and his coworkers decided to try to take a bite of it. And he said it took over an hour to do the 25 glazings. And then it was too heavy to sit in a bag without breaking through the bag. After they glazed it so many times, four of them tried to take bites of the donuts, and three of them said it was way too sweet, way too...
Oh, really? Why? Maybe the
25 times
layers of sugar?
The video viewed over 4.3 million times.
Because Dan on the text line was saying this is what happens when people are quarantined. They, you know, and can't do... They make bardcore music. No, they sit around and come up with... You know, dude, what if you took that donut
and you glaze it
25 times?
Yeah. I love the creativity there. And then another sweet that we love down here, Girl Scouts cookies. You know, I'm always going to bring you the news when there's a new flavor of Girl Scout cookie out there. And this isn't story 6.5, but if you want to take a guess, Sean, what flavor, starting in 2021, what is the new flavor of Girl Scouts cookies that they plan to roll out here?
Corona chip.
Corona chip. That's a little on the nose.
I was wrong.
We're dealing with here. Yeah, you're wrong. French toast Girl Scout cookies.
I mean, they've run out of, truly run out of ideas.
They're calling it Toast Yay.
Of course.
It'll be in the 2021 cookie season lineup. Bread-shaped cookies look like miniature slices of French toast topped with icing. And, you know, they've been hurt
what
by
if you
the...
glaze those 25 times?
Then it's even sweeter, even better. And Girl Scouts, Boy Scouts, they've all been hurt by the pandemic,
big
too.
Big time.
So the Girl Scouts, they've been offering consumers the option to buy cookies online or donate to communities in need. They've been doing that with a lot of their cookies. So if you think about it, and you're wanting some Girl Scout cookies, you want to help an organization that's been going through it, just like so many other businesses and nonprofits, maybe buy some Girl Scout cookies online. Unfortunately, you'll have to wait until next year if you want the Toast Yay French toast cookie Girl Scouts.
I don't know if I could say it. They'd say, which ones do you want, Mr. Sullivan? That one there on the picture.
No,
what's it called?
Say it.
I can't say it. The toasty.
Sir,
thing.
We're not going to give you the cookies until you say the name.
The toasty thing. All
right. That brings us to story 6.5. We've all had issues with neighbors in the past, especially of those that live close to unruly neighbors who might be parking in your spot. Mm-hmm. So one man in England got upset. His neighbor kept parking in his parking spot. They live in pretty close housing. What did he do to his neighbor's car to get back at him? That's the question. What you think?
That's the predictable things. So I would say it's probably the thing that makes the most sense. He glazed the guy's car 25 times.
That would have been awesome. He kind of glazed it. Glazed it with black cellophane. Completely wrapped the car over and over and over again in black cellophane. Dude was parked in his spot for over a day and a half. He left a nice note. Guy didn't listen to it. So he went ahead and wrapped the entire thing in pitch black cellophane. It took the guy hours
weak.
To take it.
That's pretty weak. I don't know.
That's what I thought.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's 6.5 stories with Dalton Orwig. I said it's 6.0. Dalton Orwig. Thank you, my friend.
No problem.
All right. Jason Johnson with Land Yap joins us next.